here's what the word says. And if you stand on what the word says, the only guarantee you have that the Almighty is going to uphold his word is faith. If you don't stand on the word, then there is no guarantee whatsoever that he's going to uphold his word. The Bible tells us that when he sends his word, it accomplishes what it's sent out to accomplish. When you and I stand on the word that he sends out, it accomplishes what he says it will accomplish. This is where Yeshua, I believe, speaks about when he says, whatever you bind on earth, it will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth, it will be loosed in heaven.
Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. The miracle of turning the waters of Egypt to blood, performed by Moses to demonstrate the power of Jehovah to Pharaoh, his magicians, sorcerers, and wise men, does not persuade Pharaoh to let the children of Israel go. Instead, Pharaoh hardened his heart. The back and forth with Pharaoh and Moses, in actuality, was a back and forth between Pharaoh and Jehovah. In some instances, Jehovah hardened Pharaoh's heart, but in other instances, Pharaoh was unyielding and hardened his own heart. Join us in this futile battle of Pharaoh as he hardened his heart and wages a war he cannot win. He is fighting a losing battle for power with Jehovah, Moses, and Aaron over the children of Israel. Today's study title is Pharaoh Hardened His Heart. So, let's study.
Well, again, we're going to be talking about Pharaoh's heart and how his heart was hardened by the Almighty. But we also know that Pharaoh's heart was hardened by himself. And this is some of the things that pride have a tendency to do to us and in us. We know the miracle of turning the waters of Egypt to blood performed by Moses to demonstrate the power of Jehovah to Pharaoh, his magicians, sorcerers, and wise men. And these things does not persuade Pharaoh to let the children of Israel go. Instead, we see that Pharaoh was not yielding to the Almighty. His heart had been hardened by the Almighty, and therefore he had a hard heart. Now, Moses is sent to Pharaoh again to instruct him to let Israel go. And the reason is so that they could serve Jehovah. And Pharaoh, again, is warned that if he does not, the borders of Egypt would be smitten with frogs. And this will be another one of those miracles that Moses and Aaron perform in the presence of Pharaoh. But we're going to see that these miracles were not just for Pharaoh and for his servants, the magicians and the sorcerers and the wise men, but also for the children of Israel. Israel had an opportunity to see the power of the Most High manifest in the midst of the Egyptians, and specifically toward Pharaoh, ultimately destroying the firstborn and, of course, Pharaoh's firstborn. In Exodus chapter 7, 25, we finish up on this last verse. And 7 days were fulfilled after Jehovah had smitten the river. Now, we know that in Exodus chapter 7, Aaron was instructed to smite the water. And the water turned to blood, the ponds, the pools, the streams, the rivers, all of the water of Egypt was turned to blood. What's interesting is the Bible says, and Pharaoh's magicians did the same thing. Pharaoh's magicians did the same thing. In other words, it seemed as if they were complicit and operable in turning water to blood, as the verse seems to indicate. And then in this passage, we're going to see that when it comes down to the frogs, the magicians are going to do the same thing again. In verse 25 of Exodus chapter 7, we see that from the time the water was turned to blood, 7 days had passed. And during that period, Verse 1, it says, "And Jehovah spoke unto Moses and told him, Go unto Pharaoh and say unto him, Thus saith Jehovah, Let my people go, that they may serve me." Now, this word serve is a word that means that they may work, they may serve, labor, do work. And of course, if you go down to right above usage 185, to serve like with Levitical service. And if you look at the usage of this word, 227 times, it's translated to serve. And then, of course, you see five times here where it's worshipers, worshipers. Now, we know that the children of Israel was in Egypt and they were serving Pharaoh. They were serving Pharaoh. Some would even lead to the conclusion that based on what they did once they were delivered from Egypt, when Moses went up in the mountain, they started worshiping these idols of Egypt. And so this word that they were serving, it seems that while they were in Egypt, they learned some idolatry because they were brazen in their statement that these are the gods who delivered us. And they didn't learn about these gods while they were in the wilderness. They learned about these gods while they were in the land of Egypt. It's interesting how, no matter what culture you come out of, that when people come into the knowledge of the one true, the creator of the universe, there's a tendency to associate their former way of worship to the worship of the true Elohim. You'll notice that if a person comes from a denomination, if they come from a particular country or land where other gods were worshiped, there's this mixture where people have a tendency even to mix their traditions with the service of God. And Father had an issue with this, as we're going to find out when he gave his commandments to the people. It says, you know what? Don't mix, don't add, don't serve me like the people around you serve their God. As I was sharing earlier this, actually the Gregorian New Year, talking about how, you know, growing up in superstition. And you'd be amazed of how much superstition still operates within traditional denominational churches. People can be very superstitious, even in their service and worship of the Almighty. Let me just say a thing here, because, you know, the Bible tells us that whatsoever a man thinketh, so is he. If you were brought up in a culture to where you believed that there was some truth to some of the stuff that you did, for instance, breaking a mirror, walking under a ladder, opening up an umbrella in the house, or black cats crossing your path, or certain things you do on the 1st of January every year, it would take work to not incorporate that stuff into your relationship with the Almighty. What's also interesting is that when it comes down to our mind and the way we think, that it is easy to come into the kingdom and maintain a way of thinking like you were in the world, to where dealing with issues and circumstances just like you did in the world, and not in applying the word to the situation that you're in, but applying the same way you dealt with that situation when you were in the world, the way you were dealing with it once you come into the knowledge of truth. And so we're going to see that just like the children of Israel who had been in Egypt, that what Father wanted to do was to purge Egypt out of them just as much as he wanted to bring them out of Egypt. And when we come out of our denominational areas of worship, we also have to be purged. When we come out of the world into the kingdom, we have to be purged. And this is why Paul is talking about this renewing of the mind. If we don't renew our mind with the word, then we'll operate in the mind that we had before we had access to the mind of Messiah. And so the children of Israel, they not only were slaves or servants in Egypt, but it seems as if they adopted the practice of the Egyptians in their worship. Again, that's going to play out more once we see them being delivered out of the land of Egypt and how they begin to enter into worship and a feast. Verse 2, and if thou refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all thy borders with frogs. I will smite all thy borders with frogs. Now, it's interesting as we look at these passages that this word border here, it deals with the enclosed boundary, region, territory, coast, landmark. So whatever the borders of Egypt was, these plagues was going to affect those borders. Just like it says, I will smite all thy borders, not some. And notice what it doesn't say. It says, I will smite all thy borders except Goshen. Doesn't say that. I will smite all thy borders except the borders where the Israelites live. Doesn't say that. Now, if you've been in some of the places that I've been in, you know, we're told that the Almighty preserved the Israelites from these plagues. But when you look at the verses, it doesn't say that, which means that people eisegete, they read into it instead of pulling out from it what's there. Now, there are instances where the Almighty is going to separate the children of Israel from the Egyptians when it comes down to certain of these plagues, as we're going to see. But even when you get to the end, he says to the children of Israel, says, listen, there's another plague coming. I'm going to smite the firstborn. And there's specific instructions that are given to the children of Israel that they must do, or they're going to suffer the same fate as the children of Egypt. And it's important that as we go through Exodus, that we read what is there and not read into it something that's not there. So what does the Almighty say? He says, I will smite all thy borders with frogs. Verse 3, and the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into thine house and into thy bedchamber and upon thy bed and unto the house of thy servants. And this is interesting, this word servants. Because what you're going to find when it comes down to who Pharaoh identified his servants are, that included Israel. Israel was slaves. Into the house of thy servants and upon thy people and into thine ovens and into thy kneading troughs. And again, this word upon thy servants, this is the word ebed. Ebed, that's slave, servant, slave servant, man servant, subjects, servants, worshipers of Elohim. And so this word servant is going to be used in relations to the children of Israel, to the children of Egypt, to those who call themselves serving the Most High. This is the word servant. Here's how it was used in Exodus chapter 5, when the officers of the children of Israel, and we know that the officers of the children of Israel were those who had been designated by the taskmasters of Pharaoh from among the Israelites to be the foremen or the overseers of the Israelites or the Israelites in Egypt. It says, then the officers of the children of Israel came and cried unto Pharaoh, saying, wherefore dealest thou thus with thy servants? This is when he took the straw and told them they had to find their own straw. In verse 16, there is no straw given unto thy servants. That's the word, ebed. And they say unto us, or say to us, make brick. And behold, thy servants are beaten. But the fault is in thine own people. And so we see this word is the same word for servant as it relates to an Israelite as the same as an Egyptian. Verse 4, and the frog came up from both on thee and upon thy people and upon all thy servants, or the frogs shall come up both on thee and upon thy people and upon all thy servants. And Jehovah spoke unto Moses, saying to Aaron. Now, who is he telling to do this? Moses, tell Aaron, stretch forth thine hand with thy rod over the streams, over the rivers, over the ponds, and cause frogs to come up upon the land of Egypt. You see what it says there? So the frogs came upon where? The land of Egypt. What borders? According to the previous verse, all the borders. You remember? It says, all thy borders. I will smite all thy borders. And so, verse 6, and Aaron, who? Aaron. Now, I know that in some of the Ten Commandments, we see where it seems to give the impression that Moses, and we are given the impression even from our Sunday school classes and some of even church school classes and Sabbath school classes in some cases, because people have the impression that Moses was the one who was performing these miracles, when the fact of the matter of is Aaron was instructed to perform miracles by Moses, who Father said would be Moses' prophet. And Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and did what? Covered the land of Egypt. Covered the land. Now, have there been any distinction between the land that the Egyptians were living in and the land that the Israelites were living in? Does there seem to be any distinction from these verses? Because from what I read, there isn't. Now, that's all I can go on. I can only go on what is here. I know what I have thought. I know why I thought the way I thought. I thought the way I thought because of the way I'd been taught. But when I search the scriptures for myself, I see that there are things that I have been taught that may not have been in accordance to what was written. And when I'm looking at what is written and confronting what I have been taught, I have to make some decisions. I have to make some decisions. It may be decisions I don't want to make. But if I know better, then I do what? Better. If I know truth, then I can't hold on to things that I know that, even though they may have been presented to me as truth, have come to be proven it is not. So the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. Now, what would happen with the frogs would occur throughout the land of Egypt. That apparently would include Goshen, since Goshen was within the borders of Egypt. So what does that say? That tells me that just as Pharaoh and all the Egyptians witnessed the power of the Most High, that all of the Israelites also witnessed the power of the Most High. Now, it won't be the first time, because we know that there are times, brothers and sisters, that the righteous suffer from the works of the unrighteous. The children of Israel that did not rebel against the Almighty had to wander in the wilderness too for 40 years. They weren't exempt. Verse 7. Now, here's the part I don't get, but it's here, so I have to deal with it. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs upon the land of Egypt. It's like, weren't there enough frogs, bro? Why would you bring up frogs on your own people? You know, when Moses threw down his staff, what did they do? They threw down their staff. Moses' staff turned to serpents, their staff turned into serpents. When Moses told Aaron to smite the water and turn it to blood, the magicians, the Bible said, did the same thing. And now Moses is telling Aaron, you know, cause the frogs to come up. And what does the magicians do? They do the same thing. And so the magicians cause frogs to come up on the land. Why? Because they were in competition. They would compete with Moses. And in some things, they were able to go and compete with Moses. In the case of the serpents, Moses' serpent or Aaron's rod that he threw down ate their serpents. Of course, now they were rodless. They lost their rod. Anyway, verse 8. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, entreat Jehovah that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people. And notice what he says. And I will let the people go that they may do sacrifice unto your Jehovah. I will let the people go, but you entreat Jehovah that he may take away the frogs from me. Now, I would have to conclude that these are even the frogs that the magicians conjured up, that they would no longer be coming up out of the water. And so Moses goes into a process of negotiation. He begins to negotiate. And Moses says unto Pharaoh, glory over me. And basically what that means is that, okay, you tell me when. You tell me, I'm going to give you the honor of setting the date. He says, glory over me. When shall I entreat for thee and for thy servants and for thy people to destroy the frogs from thee and thy houses, that they may remain in the river only? So what is he saying? You tell me when to go to him and for thy servants and people to destroy the frogs from thee in your house. In other words, he'll stop it, but they will stay in the river. And what is Pharaoh is going to give him? He says, Moses gives Pharaoh the honor of seeking the time for him to inquire of Jehovah when the frogs should stop coming up on the land. And what does Pharaoh say? Pharaoh says tomorrow, which is another thing I don't get. Okay, if you go tell him, why wait till tomorrow? Why not do it right now? But I'm not there. And what I'm seeing in some of this, and you have to see this too, that there seems to be some time lapse from the time Aaron smites the water to the frogs come up and now they cover the land to where Pharaoh and Moses is having a conversation telling him, okay, take the frogs away. And then he says tomorrow, and he says, be it according to your word, that thou mayest know that there is none like unto Jehovah Elohim. And so what we see here is when Pharaoh says tomorrow, then tomorrow those frogs are going to stop. And Moses is saying, and by this, you're going to know there is none like Jehovah. There is no Elohim like him. In verse 11, and the frogs shall depart from you and from your house and from your servants and from your people. They shall remain in the river only. Now, the other thing you need to see here is that Moses is having this conversation with Pharaoh, but he hasn't had this conversation with Jehovah yet. That comes next. And Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto Jehovah because of the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh. And so what happens? Moses negotiates with Pharaoh. And in verse 13, we're going to see Jehovah honors Moses. Verse 13, and Jehovah did according to the word of Moses. And Jehovah did according to the word of Moses. And the frogs died out of the houses, out of the villages, and out of the fields. And they gathered them together upon heaps, and the land stank. Now, what I find here to be quite interesting for my own self is Moses is operating on behalf of Yehovah. He and the Almighty has some conversation. He tells Moses what to do. Moses follow. He does what he says. And then in the process, he is negotiating, but he's negotiating in good faith, and he's negotiating according to his relationship with the Almighty, acting out of obedience to what the Almighty has instructed him. And here's the thing that I have found to be truth, while at times challenging, is we can know what the Almighty say when it comes to circumstances in our lives, when it comes to dealing with loved ones, dealing with wives, dealing with children, business partners, and circumstances where here's what the word says. And if you stand on what the word says, the only guarantee you have that the Almighty is going to uphold his word is faith. If you don't stand on the word, then there is no guarantee whatsoever that he's going to uphold his word. The Bible tells us that when he sends his word, it accomplishes what is sent out to accomplish. When you and I stand on the word that he sends out, it accomplishes what he says it will accomplish. This is where Yeshua, I believe, speaks about when he says, whatever you bind on earth, it will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth, it will be loosed in heaven. If Father says to me to train my child, and if I love my child, discipline my child, then if I do what he says to my child, then which is ultimately his child, then who's going to back me up? Who's going to back me up? It's the same with my wife. Just as Mr. and Mrs. Adam, you know, when they were in the garden, Adam didn't have to eat from that tree. He didn't. Could he stop Mrs. Adam from eating? No, he couldn't. He didn't have that authority. Remember, the authority they had was not authority over each other. He said they should take dominion over the things on the earth, the things in the water, and take dominion over all the earth. But he didn't give them dominion over each other. And you also have to note that when Father began to deal with each person, he dealt with each entity. He dealt with Mrs. Adam, he dealt with Mr. Adam, and he dealt with the serpent. Whoever was operating in disobedience to his commands, his instructions, that's who he deals with. If you disobey because somebody else disobeyed, then when he deals with them, he's got to deal with you, because he can't deal with that disobedient person without dealing with you and your disobedience. But when you stand on the word, regardless to what those around you, what you will find is Father will deal with them, but he will commend you. And this is ultimately what it's going to come down to when it comes down to the judgment. It's so easy for us, and just watching what's going on in the earth, what's going on around the world, you will see how individuals can be intimidated by other people to fall in line to their agenda instead of standing on what is right. There is pressure amongst many to go along with the flow, especially when you are part of some kind of party, you're part of some kind of fraternity, you're part of some kind of sorority. You make these pledges to these organizations. And now you're finding that you have to align yourself with them even when they're wrong. Or you will be viewed as a traitor. And this is why it is very difficult for somebody to be in allegiance, pledge their allegiance to the Most High, and then pledge their allegiance to something else. Because it will happen to where your allegiance is going to be tested. You will be tested. And now you got to make a decision as to who you're going to serve. Even youth in school, they talk about peer pressure. You got peer pressure. You got parent pressure. You've got business pressure. You got pressure all around you. Pressure from your children. Pressure from your wife. Pressure from your husband. Pressure from your parents. Pressure from your employer. There's always going to be pressure from somewhere, from somebody, and you will constantly have to make some decisions on what are you going to stand on. I pray that we all come to the conclusion that Joshua came to when he said, choose you this day who you will serve, as for me and my house. Now, it takes a lot of authority for a man to speak for his house. When you have people living in your house, they have their own mind. And I could say that from a Joshua standpoint, for his wife or his children, whoever were living in that house, he can make that stand knowing that if anybody in his house did not align with the stand that he's making, that he now is going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to deal with it. Not come in alignment with it. Now, Father has already put it out there that when it comes down to making decisions and whose authority has the authority to do that, then everything else has to line up. So when a man stands on what he know to be the truth of the word of Jehovah, no matter how much opposition he may face from his wife, or she may face from her husband, or he may, you know, from their children, he just have to know that he's standing on the truth, and he can expect Father to deal with the fallout. Because I'll tell you, when you stand for what is truth, there will be fallout. There will be fallout. And this is what causes so many people to compromise and even to lie, because they don't want the fallout. They want to try to keep the peace, when the fact of the matter is that there is no peace to begin with. The only peace that can come to a house is when that house is standing on the word of Jehovah. It's a hard thing to do at times. It's even harder when you're unequally yoked. Y'all hear that? That's a hard thing to do sometimes. It's even harder when you're unequally yoked. What I'm saying, it's hard when you're equally yoked. Because even though you may be equally yoked, you don't think equally. You think differently. So we're going to move beyond the verses that we were reading, because next week we're going to get into something that's going to distinguish, and I want you to see that. So I wanted to jump in this, and we'll just finish this last portion out in dealing with lice. In verse 16, and the Lord said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out thy rod and smite the dust of the land. Now, going back to verse 15, and when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had said. Who hardened his heart? Who hardened his heart? He hardened his own heart. When Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them. There's something about having a hard heart, brothers and sisters. When you have a hard heart, even though when there's specific statements in this passage, as we're going to see even going forth and what we've already seen, because the Almighty said he was going to harden Pharaoh's heart, but every time Pharaoh's heart was hardened, it wasn't Jehovah hardening it. People harden their own hearts. And we see that Israel did this on several occasions. Father called them stiff-necked, rebellious, hard heart. hard heart, and he certainly didn't harden their hearts. You see, when a person has in their mind what they want to do, they become hardened by that. They become hardened by it. The heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can know it? A man sometimes thinks that what he's doing is right, but it's only right in his own sight. And once you get in your mind, I mean, how can a criminal commit a crime thinking it's not a crime, and if they get caught, they're going to do some time? Back where I came from, they used to say, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. What are they saying? You better think about the time that comes with that crime before you commit that crime. Don't be boo-hooing after you get caught. You better know that going forward. You see, you need to know, and this is why we have to be slow to speak, slow to anger, and quick to hear, because you have to think through a matter. You have to think through, if I do this, here's the consequences. And you, as we go through these teachings with Messiah and Matthew and the Gospels, you're going to see that Messiah does this a lot. He does this a lot. He think about how the Pharisees and Sadducees are going to respond to what he say before he even say it. And there are times, if you think through what you are about to do, you'll begin to now see what you are about to get engaged in as far as how it's going to affect the people around you. You got to understand something. When I do something, and just like you, if you don't count the cost of what you're going to do, then you will find yourself in a situation that you couldn't imagine. Or didn't imagine. You need to count the cost. If I do this, these are the consequences. These are the potential repercussions. This is where the fallout is going to be. This is where I'm going to have some issues. And if you don't take the time to do that, if you just operate, you know, on a moment, then something I was thinking today, you know, you can't control a mob. You can't control a mob. Matter of fact, you can't control people. You really can't. People think their own thoughts. And when you get people all excited, you know, somebody's going to break rank. Somebody always break rank. And a matter that shouldn't have been what it became would not have happened had it never been initiated in the first place. Just think about that. When those frogs stopped coming up out of the water, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and then he decided that he was not going to hearken unto them. And here's the thing. See, men, the big difference between men of Elohim and men is men of Elohim honor their word even when men don't. Just because somebody don't honor their word doesn't mean you don't honor yours. If somebody decide that they're going to renege on a promise or break an oath, then you have to look at that and weigh that situation as to what your response is going to be. Because a lot of things that people do, you just have to leave that up to the Almighty to deal with them. Unless you take matters in your own hands. And then, of course, you may be facing some consequences as a result. Verse 16. And Jehovah said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out thy rod and smite the dust of the land, that it may become lice throughout all, throughout what? All the land of Egypt. And they did so. For Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and smote the dust of the earth, and it became lice in man and in beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, notice it doesn't say except Goshen. Again, verse 18, and here's another piece I don't get. And the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but they could not. Now, up until this point, so there were lice upon man and upon beast. The magicians could duplicate the serpent miracle. The magicians could duplicate the blood miracle. The magicians could duplicate the frog miracle. But this lice miracle, they couldn't. And now it's as if Father is shutting them down, making them realize, okay, Pharaoh, you said, Moses went, told him about the frog. You said, take the frogs away, and we're going to do what? Let the people go. But Pharaoh decided he would harden his heart. And here's the thing. When he did that, at that particular moment, the game changed, if you would. The magicians were no longer able to do their magic. They realized that this was the finger of Jehovah. And then these individuals tried to warn Pharaoh, but what? His heart was hard. Then the magicians said unto Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them as Jehovah had said. And this, my brothers and sisters, it's really, what's the point in having a cabinet or a council or wise men or people around you to tell you the right things and to help you in your decisioning if you're not going to listen to them? So Pharaoh has these magicians, he's got these sorcerers, he's got these wise men, and now these magicians are saying, you know, up until this point, we were able to hang out, but we realize now that this power source that we are dealing with is not something that we're capable. This is above our pay grade, basically. This is going beyond our ability. And we're saying to you, Pharaoh, that this God is not something to be played with, but Pharaoh had already hardened his heart. And because his heart was already hard, he ain't hearing it. He ain't hearing it. And I want to encourage us as we come to the end of this particular portion. Next week, we're going to get deeper, and there's going to be further distinction that is made to where we're going to see that there will come a point where the protection of the children of Israel is indicated as relates to Egypt being exposed. But up until this point, the Israelites experienced, it seems, everything that the Egyptians experienced. And if somebody can find something that is contrary to that, I am certainly open to look at it and investigate it. I say that because at this point I have not. And don't think I haven't looked. Because as I was reading this, it dawned on me that there are things that I've been taught too, that, you know, it's just not so. And so bringing those out, it's important for us to see what is there versus what we have been told is there.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.